That's 180 minutes and no goals in the past two games. Will someone please think of the podcast content here? But luckily here at UTAS, we have a very simple mentality. WNP, win the next pod. I'm Julian Roberts. I'll be your host on this week's show. We're going to go through that 0-0 draw at the Abbey against Burton yesterday, trying to pick apart a few of the talking points on what's going wrong at the moment. And then we're going to touch on recruitment, obviously, too, at the end of the show, the big word amongst Cambridge United fans at the moment. I do have a panel with me, Jack Swindlehurst. Are you ready to WNP?
I am, yeah. I've got my WNP boots on and, ready to dissect another attritional 0-0 draw.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, me and Tom Walker, our other panellists, we've had the privilege of being on both of these 0-0 pods. What did you do wrong in a past life, Tom, to deserve that? Definitely past. Blame it on the past, mate.
No, I think I was very much paying for the sin of Friday evening, to be honest, on Saturday afternoon. But we'll not go into that. Look, we done well to battle through last week, and we're going to need to pluck up some of the same energy for this, yeah. I think. Although, to be fair, maybe understandably, there's a bit more content to it because it affords us an opportunity to be negative for a change.
It does, doesn't it? I mean, I mentioned in my intro there, you know, what's going wrong at the moment. Maybe it's probably a bit too much of an exaggeration, but there is definitely a feeling that something was going a bit wrong yesterday. Franklin's asked this question, Tom. Are you happy that your prophecy of 5 points from the last three games with no losses came true? Smiling Riley there.
You're still thinking about the 5 points, aren't you? No, not really. Look, we obviously had this kind of weird sort of semi-philosophical discussion about whether it was better to get five from the three of Fleetwood, Exeter and Burton, or six, because obviously six indicates you lose one of them and you don't want to lose any games against such teams in and around you. And obviously there was a train of thought which goes, well, look, before I'm going to take a five, so I'm pretty happy with that. But when you take four from the first two, I guess pre-match you might have been quite happy with a point against Burton as well, like not the end of the world. But, you know, in the context of how the game went, when you end up playing the thick end of half an hour against 10-man Burton, who showed, you know, like ourselves, Exeter, really, no ambition really in the final third at all. You kind of can't help but be disappointed, I think.
Yeah, it's one of them, isn't it? It's like the theory sort of works and everyone's sort of on board with the theory, and then you see it play out in practice in front of you and you're like, oh, actually really should have turned that into 7 points. Swindle, let's start quite broadly then. 0-0 at the Abbey against Burton, obviously, is what we're talking about here. Exeter last week on the pod, we sort of spoke about how decent a point it was, how sort of in general quite pleased we were to go to a place like that. That point looks a lot better this week, by the way, considering they've gone to Bristol Rovers and Barnsley since then and beaten both of them. So I think that point actually has aged pretty well. This one, I'm not saying let's not talk about how it's going to age, but just your instant reflections, it feels very different, a reaction to a 0-0 draw than it does last week.
Yeah, I mean, when we come to the business end of the season, I think it could be looked back on as 2 points dropped, really. The opportunity was there, and you're playing against a team who are on our level or maybe even, you know, slightly below it. We should be looking to beat them, especially when we've had man advantage. I think, yeah, kind of lack of ambition to a point and maybe lack of ability as well. And you made a good point in the week in the chat. I think the kind of the happy clappers and the optimists will probably think it's another point gained. And, you know, last season we spoke about not having many draws and being a team that was easy to beat. We kind of contrived to lose games, you know, last season. So there is that. And of course, we all know that clean sheets, we know how the adage goes. But clean sheets are good and a point gained, I suppose. But yeah, I think there'll be an air of frustration because it was pretty tepid football from Cambridge United, and just not enough, you know, backbone or cutting edge, really. And it was quite hard to watch, really.
Feels a bit same old story, doesn't it? Which I suppose maybe that's why the frustrations are a bit amplified, that, you know, new gaffer in charge. We've also had the vast majority of a transfer window to try and add some depth or some attacking talent, and not really seeing it on the pitch yet. You sort of touched on it there, Swindle. I'm going to throw it to Tom, because there is, you know, is... Should we be respecting this point a bit more than we are, or actually, is it more of a case of, well, if you're not gonna beat Burton and 10-man Burton at home, does that sort of indicate something going a bit wrong in the attacking area of the pitch in a longer term sense for the rest of the season?
Yeah, I like I think it's okay to be unhappy with just getting a point from the game. Like I get that we've not lost it, and I think, to be honest, one of the big sort of credits really that's gone to Neil Harris since he came in is that we are just factually at the moment a much much harder team to beat. We don't need to kind of reopen everything and go through it all again. But if you look at the way that we were losing games, sort of October, November time, Burton away, for example, is probably a good example of it. Like, we were just getting pushed over, just getting pushed out of these games. And obviously, I guess the improvement or the mark of what the impact that Harris has been able to make, I know there's maybe a little bit of debate about that anyway, but is that you come out of this game having and the exit to one, really having never really felt at any point like you're gonna kind of chuck anything away. Particularly X, I don't really think there was ever any proper sustained spell of pressure. And against Burton, obviously, even when they had 11 men, but certainly when they went down to 10, it was just like as comfortable as you like. But so it's not that is the most disappointing thing. I think it's just the context of how the game went, and game state dictates everything. You know, the onus was totally on us to go out and win that football match. And, for sort of 30, 35 minutes, it should have been just total attack against defence, relentless pressure, keeping it, kind of on top of Burton and making life really difficult for them. And we weren't really able to do that, I don't think. And that's where the disappointment comes in. And, again, we're kind of being a little hypothetical, I guess. But if come the end of the season, we're the wrong side of the line and it's like one or two points that does it, it's very much that sort of game, that sort of fixture, that sort of result that you look back on and you go, that's kind of where we've fallen a little bit short, just not quite being able to convert one into three. And to be honest, like, a lot of the chat at the start of the season was about turning zeros into ones. And I guess in a sense, that's kind of what we've done. If you're of the opinion that we might have lost that game under the previous regime. But yeah, I mean, I think I was happy to kind of paper over the cracks of the Exeter one. There was a lot of chat afterwards. We had a few questions in and discussed about how we were able to impact the sort of forward part of the pitch, or not being able to impact, or not even really tried to, and we just kind of papered over it with, which I think is fair, and I still maintain, like, it's an away point in League One, it's not the end of the world. Like, Exeter, like you say, have gone on to hurt teams better than us, and they weren't able to do it to us, so that in itself is a positive. But this one just stings a little bit because you feel like that situation is well there for the taking. And if you look at Exeter again, just use them as an example, I look at the league table just before coming on it, they're 14th. Like, they've absolutely climbed straight out of it just about putting a couple of good results together. And it's not an easy thing to do, but it looks easy. If you can just put together a couple of decent results in games that you believe you have the quality or should have the quality to be able to win, but we couldn't. And that's why we're all, I think, a little frustrated. But yeah, look, the last, what, 7 or 8 games, I think, have been overall an improvement, and that's still the case. And I guess if you keep going on like that, you keep pottering along and you keep being hard to beat and you can nick the odd win here and there, then you stay up, and it's just a question of sort of how comfortable can you make it. So that's the challenge.
Yeah, maybe it's good, because I think coming out of the ground, Tom, especially, me, you and Casper were walking together, and I think we were all pretty frustrated. But obviously, taking your initial feeling after a game, speaking, and then 24 hours later, sort of you can reflect on it slightly differently. Martin's asked here, Swindle, yes, it's not the result we wanted, but 71% possession and 20 shots is very different to what we've known over recent years. Are we actually seeing steps in the right direction? Similarly, Josh has asked a similar question. Are some fans being a bit harsh after that result? To be fair, the options off the bench were limited yet again. I get the calls for Njoku, but we can't consistently rely on an 18-year-old. Harris's point about rarely facing a low block was valid too. These players aren't used to it. The Njoku stuff we'll come to later on in the show. But in general, do you think, are you sort of with Tom that there's a frustration about the context of the game state, but actually if you take a step back and think, well, that's a point that, we've got as many draws at this point of the season as we did for the whole of last season. Is that, as Martin asks, already a step in the right direction in terms of how we're being managed and that we're harder to beat?
Yeah, it's quite tricky, really, because you can't win or lose when you're a football fan. If you lean too much one way and you're too fickle, and if you lean too much the other way, you're a happy clapper. I think, to be honest, the gap now to the relegation zone, if you're looking at the table, has reduced, and now it's only 5 points. And we look at Reading and we imagine they may even get more Points deductions or whatever. But I think yesterday is quite an opportunity missed, really. And I can completely understand frustration from people. It's 24 hours or so after the game or whatever. But I kind of feel like we've really missed an opportunity there, and it makes the game, the upcoming game against Shrewsbury, like a huge game. They're right next to us in the league, and suddenly, if we lose that and teams below us win, we're right back in it. And I think, Burton were there for the taking, really. And any team in this league playing against with 10 men, we should fancy ourselves. And I do think their performance, was more ambitious than we have seen previously, but also not the level it needs to be. I think, I understand what people are saying about not having the options off the bench, but that's part of the manager's and the coaching staff's job, is to get the best out of the players available. And if not, then we should be bending over backwards to make signings that we clearly haven't made yet. So I think you can be kind of philosophical about it, and a clean sheet is good and a point gained is good. But I do think, this could be a really big week in the season for Cambridge United.
Yeah, well,
I just want to add to
hundred
that, just
percent.
very quickly. Like, obviously, the question and the stats that were mentioned there were about 20 odd shots, 70 odd percent possession. Which I guess on the face of it looks quite good, but you do have to kind of keep in mind the context of how the game was going. Like, if we had had anything short of about 70% possession from that game, because of the way that Burton just totally sat in and were just totally happy to give us the ball, like, you'd be a bit miffed. Like, you'd be a bit like, well, something's gone wrong here. And especially the point about shots, like, a lot of them were kind of pot shots from the edge of the area. Bennett had a couple. Obviously Lancaster had that one, which he should, frankly, should have done better on. But the other stat that we always go back to is XG, and from that we've created less than half a goal, 0.45, which is not good enough. So, we can look at the possession stats and the amount of shots that we had and just go, oh, well, that's fine then, because it looks like we dominated the game. But unfortunately, like, well, the key detail here is what quality was it, and what were we actually able to do with all that possession? The answer was, frankly, not a lot, which is the frustrating thing. So I don't think we're going too on board of it at all.
I agree. And I think that the frustration is maybe almost, bear with me here, like, not even the result itself, but the opportunity that the game represented, in the sense that we're treading this little tightrope at this stage of the season where, like you say, Swindle, a week everything could change so quickly, and suddenly we're 2 points off the drop and we're right in the middle of it. Or you just give you've got to use these games and these opportunities to give yourself that breathing room. It's obviously not a disaster. It doesn't condemn us to anything. It does nothing really in the grand scheme of things. But it's that opportunity to have just given us that little, just that gap, just try and grow those gaps for as we go into tricky runs towards March and April. Let's get into a couple of bits of the game itself. Central midfield, let's start there. Steve's asked a question that I was going to ask. Tom, I'm going to give it to you because it was something that me and you were talking about all game yesterday. Steve said, why do we hardly ever win any second balls in midfield? Every week, the ball in midfield gets loose and gets picked up by the opposition. Does playing two in midfield just mean we get overrun? So I wanted to ask you two questions here. Firstly, I thought Cousins, even more than Digby, had such a poor game yesterday. I thought he was really out of nick, out of touch, always second to those 50-50s, looked quite sort of weak yesterday. And then on the ball, he's just like really misplacing loads of really simple passes. Digby similar, I guess, but also, as well as how you think those two played, I wanted to ask, are you frustrated with playing this double pivot at home against a side like Burton, who, even when they had 11 men, were sitting in, as you've already said? Do we not want a player in there, centre mid, who's going to try and drive forward and unlock defences?
Yeah, I guess the question is, who is that player?
Yeah, I guess.
Which is probably the thing that Harris would point to, I guess.
But it's the 28th of Jan, Tom. Like, shouldn't we have known that by now? Like, I mean, maybe we haven't spoke about it enough, but.
Yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with that. And to be honest, I think after another striker, I think a centre mid would be right at the top of my priority. It's
Same, yeah.
probably above and beyond the right back, to be honest, which has been the position that's been talked about the most, other than the sort of centre forwards. So I'm not disputing the fact that we should have that option, and that's an option that I would like to see, but
Sure.
it's not something that we appear to have. I don't necessarily have a problem with, like, the principle of playing two centre mids in a system like that as a kind of double pivot, if you like. I don't have too much of a problem with that. I have a problem with the personnel that was in it, because for me, in a game like that, you're going to have more of the ball, and you need players who are good on the ball, and you need players who can use it well. You expect that of Cousins, but like you say, he was well off the pace. Like, you know, for a player that's played 200 odd games in the Championship, and you know, is probably on money that we've not paid to players ever, really, certainly not for a long time. You simply expect like the sort of floor of what his performance level is to be higher than what he showed. You know, you should think that even on off days, putting sort of in a 6 out of 10, and he was just like well off it. Digby, frankly, I just don't think has the required the required quality, the required skill set to be of much use in a game like that. Obviously, he's a scrapper and he can break things up fairly well, but if the onus is on what can you do with the ball, how quickly can you move it, how intelligently can you move it, he just hasn't quite got it, I don't think. And that showed, and that's why he was taken off. And then May comes on. And I think this is maybe the thing which is maybe slightly frustrating, is that at that point in the game, I think they're already down to 10 men when we'd made the sub of Digby going off and May coming on. Like, everything's in front of you there. Like, you might as well just have like a centre mid stepping in to do that. Centre back stepping in to do that job when you're in possession, and have like another forward, whether it's Njoku, whether it's a different winger, what, you know, whoever it might be. So that for me is the frustrating bit. It's not really so much in starting in that shape and starting with that system. It's more once the game pans out the way it was panning out that you kind of persist with it. And you know, May's come back in and just hasn't been the same player as he was when he went before. That's not, to my mind, so much of a slight on him and his individual quality. It's more just how it goes when you have a, you know, like a year out injured. You know, you're unlikely to come back a better player for that, and that's kind of what we're seeing. So yeah, look, I would like to see us have the option of having someone more creative in that role. I guess that is George Thomas, might be a Lewis Simper, for example, that we obviously discussed about afterwards. When they come back in, these are players that I believe are much better suited at using the ball than maybe either of the other two, and I'll include May in that as well. And I, again, like the big problem I have is not so much starting with it; it's more just how it was executed and how it played out. Because the thing that was just absolutely driving me up the wall while I was watching the game is how slow everything was. Like the centre backs would pass it to one of the centre mids, and there's 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 touches before they've even moved it. And it's like, they're down to 10 men. They're going to sit in. They're going to sit deep. They're going to make life difficult for you because they're going to sit in a really rigid structure. You've got to move them about. You've got to move them about quicker. You've got to move them side to side, sort of through the lines, and just make it a much more difficult task for them than it was. And we weren't able to do that because we just simply weren't moving the ball quickly enough. It just took an age for it to get from like one side of the pitch to the other, or to get from sort of one line to the next. And you're just asking for someone to show a bit of quality, just to show a bit of bravery, really, just to kind of even just give the ball away, but trying to do something a bit more incisive, something that might actually, you know, sort of unpick the lock, so to speak. You bring Lancaster on, that's I guess what you would want from him. Wasn't able to deliver it, frankly. Never really looks like he's able to deliver it. And this is kind of where the frustration lies, I think, is just like, that's the part of the pitch for me that meant we didn't win that game. It's the midfield bit of the 2 and the 10, and that is where we fell short, I think, just so clearly. And look, we can talk about the forward area of the pitch as well, because, and I'm sure we will, but like, you end up in a situation where you've got like Lyle Taylor out wide a lot, you know, sort of chasing lost causes, and like it either isn't or shouldn't have to be his game. But for me, yeah, it kind of all starts from that base of the two in midfield, I think, which just wasn't good enough.
Yeah, it does. But also this conversation about, let's just move on to that attacking midfield position, because I think you summarised that, everything in centre mid, well enough. But that conversation you were just talking about with, let's take Lancaster as an example, but I think you could apply it to a lot of people who have played across those, let's say, three positions, right? How many times have we had these conversations where it just doesn't look like, especially against 10 men, by the way, I think I said to you after the game, Tom, like, teams going down to 10 men just doesn't seem to be a big advantage to us at all. We don't seem to be able to capitalise on it at all. And it was just the same story again. Like, do you think at some point, Tom, like, we just have to start looking at some of these players and just go, I don't know how much more any manager can get out of these players?
Well, it's a difficult one, this. And look, I don't want to sit here and, because obviously we were very critical of Mark Bonner while he was here, and critical of a lot of the things he did as a manager with this squad of players, particularly sort of right towards the end. So I don't want it to be like, firstly, we're all on the manager's back, and then the manager goes, and then it's all on the players. I don't want that to be how it comes across. But there is there's a small but increasing part of me that just thinks like, We believed, and I think still believe, that the level of quality in this squad is better than what it was last season. We believe it's of a decent enough standard that we should be seeing probably more in the final third than what we have all season, really. But what we've seen maybe more recently does lead me to think, is there kind of a reason that you're playing for us and not for, you know, if you look at like Kachunga, Bolton, and if you look at Cousins in the Championship, for example. And I think we immediately jumped to the assumption of injuries, which is a fair one, because a lot of these guys did spend a long time out. George Thomas spent a long time out before he came here, having played at a higher level, same for Cousins, same for Kachunga, etc., etc. The list kind of goes on a bit. You know, Taylor's obviously not played football for a long time. Harsha dig him out, which I'm not really doing. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of hard to get away from the fact that you feel like there's a level of quality in this squad that we're just not seeing. So that's either on the manager or it's just on the players' inability to showcase what they're all about. And I just felt that, particularly for a lot of the more experienced guys who had probably a bit more responsibility on their shoulders yesterday, they just weren't able to take it and weren't able to show it. And that's obviously quite a kind of intangible criticism. So I'm not really sure, like, how you would kind of want that to manifest itself and how you'd want it to look, but just a bit more than we saw, I think. But I will maintain that I don't believe the quality of the players is in itself the biggest problem. I think as a football club, like, our approach over the last few years, and understandably because of the resources we've got and have had, has been safety first. It's been about, can you try and not lose games and not about not winning them. You know, the point about not being in the position of having to, you know, kind of break a team down before, or you know, not playing against too many low blocks, I kind of get the sentiment of, but to me it's just a bit of a cop out. Like, to me it's just players need to just take a bit more responsibility, really. You know, you always hear the phrase like take the game by the scruff of the neck. Like, that's what you want from your centre mid. It's what you want from a Jack Lancaster. It's what you want from like Rofi, Kai Kai. Get at your man, beat someone, get the crowd off their feet, excite people, but like, ask questions of the people in front of you, and they just weren't doing that. And I guess part of that is it the system they're set up in, or is it frankly just a failure to execute or show anything? And it's pretty difficult to say, really, because, you know, it's two managers that have set up in a very similar way. And the players have kind of remained the same. So it's kind of hard to see exactly what the problem is and exactly what the fix is. But hopefully the fix is sort of two or three coming in, you know, before the window shuts. And you just kind of don't have to rely on some of these players as much as we have been.
Yeah, it feels desperately needed. It was actually a point that Harris made afterwards, Swindle, we were talking about just before we started recording. He only made two changes. And he said in his post-match that he made two changes. He had another available free, but he didn't think that they would add to what was already on the pitch. First of all, I mean, is that a bit of a damning indictment of like of the depth and who we have on the bench? Secondly, there's one name that keeps popping up that I think Tom's already mentioned, which is young Brandon Njoku. Obviously, last time he featured for the U's, came off the bench against Fleetwood and put in a sterling half an hour alongside Lyle Taylor. Mr. White actually asked, why don't we give Njoku 10 minutes? Why didn't we give him 10 minutes to cause havoc at the end? So I suppose two questions there, Swindle. Like, A, do you think Harris like doesn't consider Njoku good enough? Or what's the explanation for him not coming on?
I don't know, in all honesty, and I completely agree. I think we should have thrown him on. It would have been exactly the type of game that I think he could have got involved in. He scares defenders. You know, he's really kind of, he just brings another level to it. Definitely didn't have a player like him on, really, yesterday. So, yeah. And tired legs. I mean, it just makes perfect sense to bring a young player like that on to target these players who've been playing without a... without Steve Sidham for the best part of half an hour. And I just think it's an odd one. I think we really are really thin on the ground as far as personnel is concerned, and I know that, you know, there's still a few days left of this transfer window, but it would have been nice to have a few more bodies through the door to, you know, if we don't have enough quality in the squad, you know, we could have done with some more bodies through the door to call on, you know, for the whole of January. So we've left it late once again, and it the worrying thing is, the closer it gets to Thursday, if there's deals that aren't quite over the line, you know, and we miss out because it's last minute, it just feels like a waste. And yeah, I think Tom made a good point about Adam May, for example. I think he hasn't been the same since he come back from his injury. But I think there's quite a few got to be held accountable, really, because some of them, it didn't look like everyone was trying their hardest yesterday. And that might sound a little bit kind of judgmental, but and a bit kind of reactionary. But the players have got to be held accountable, as does Neil Harris. But, you know, still finding his feet as the manager of Cambridge United. and still working out who the best players are. I mean, yeah, it is pretty damning for those players who were on the bench and didn't get selected. You'd have to say, I think you made the point beforehand. I don't think he rates Sakho Janer. And yeah, I do think.
Justified that, I would argue. Fair enough.
What did you say?
Probably quite justified, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, sadly.
Because I think there's 6,500 other people in the ground yesterday. Probably don't rate him that much either, to be honest.
Yeah.
With the greatest of respect, I should say, having not shown it. But there we go.
Yeah, but I no,
having
I
just
hear you on
slated
that.
him and his professional and his professional job.
But yeah, I think pretty much, yeah, we are light in personnel. We don't have enough quality, and this is the time that we need to do it. And it could make or break our season what happens this week, I think.
Yeah, it just felt like a simple one, didn't it? Like, and Njoku
Yeah.
just—he'd already shown it. It didn't seem like a huge risk considering you're playing against 10. They didn't have a big threat. Just throw another one on. Like, you've got the question of legs and May not quite being back to his full his best self from what we've seen. It felt obvious to me that like Njoku was the sub instead of May, but he might have had his reasons. And fair enough, he's not wrong that there isn't a crazy. Well, there is really no depth. So. Frustrating. He also said that he was expecting to have two in the matchday squad today, but for reasons outside of our control, they weren't in the squad and haven't been completed yet, that we know of at least. Last question on sort of areas of the pitch from yesterday. Tom, Lyle Taylor, you've mentioned him, and I don't think this is an area of concern in the same way that we're talking about the whole midfield area, to be honest, but. Yesterday it was remarkable how deep and how wide he was dropping to get the ball. And actually, a couple of times I found it massively frustrating that he dig out a crossing opportunity for Bennett, and Lyle Taylor's like stood like 2 meters away from him. Do you think that's a system thing? Do you think there's a bit of blame at his door, or is it just a lack of service and he's just going after the ball and trying to make something happen?
Yeah, I think it'll probably sound a bit counterintuitive based on what you've just said. But I actually quite liked his performance on Saturday, to be honest. I felt, in terms of like the intangibles, and maybe this is just because I'm really easily pleased and quite basic, which is probably quite a fair criticism of myself. But like I felt he just showed a lot more willingness and a lot more effort and a lot more passion than a lot of the other players did. Like a couple of times, he showed a bit of frustration, particularly with the goalkeeper, understandably. And I don't mind seeing that at times. So that's in terms of his body language. But I think in terms of the way he played, I think the reason he was sort of being pulled out of position was because no one else was doing it. Like, the amount of times that Liam Bennett would get the ball on the right or Andrew would get the ball on the left, and like they're trying to break forward and find something. You're looking for that pass down the channel where they can just clip it in behind and get into a crossing position. And you're looking for a Lancaster to make that run or a winger or someone to do that. But Lyle Taylor's doing it. Like he's a 33-year-old striker who's not played a lot of football. He's been chucked in. He's played 90 minutes for the first time in God knows how long, in consecutive games. And he's the one doing all the running. Like it shouldn't be like that. And I think the reason it was just lays at the door of everyone else in the team. I think you've got to kind of do a lot of his running for him. That maybe ties into the point of whether Njoku should have come on the pitch, because you feel like if ever there was a willing runner, he would have been one. And I feel like if you go into the last 20 minutes, half an hour of the game, and you've got Lyle Taylor, a presence in the box every time you go forward, you feel like there's a good chance that you nick something there. But he wasn't, and I feel like the reason he wasn't was primarily because he was off doing other people's jobs. I hope that was the case in a way, because if that's the way it's been set up, then and obviously that's the plan, then I feel like we're kind of misusing probably our best attacking talent, really. So yeah, I mean it's frustrating in the sense of like the way it actually plays out, but I don't see it as a slight on Taylor. I don't see it as a slight on his performance or what he can bring to the team. I just think there wasn't enough responsibility taken, I think from other areas, and he was doing a lot of it himself.
Yeah. Worth noting that question coming from David, and obviously thank you everyone for all the questions. A lot of frustrated Hughes fans in the mentions this morning, which I think reflects how a lot of the fan base is feeling, to be honest. So yeah, frustrating one. Another frustrating aspect of it, I thought, was the referee. Before going into this, I'll make the point: the referee absolutely did not cost us that game yesterday, or did not affect the result of that game. That was absolutely all down to us. And I thought, I don't know what you think, Swindle. I don't know if this is just frustrated football fan in me. But I just thought the way he dealt with the Burton keeper, who'd been doing it for 40 minutes and booked him in the 96th minute, was just such a tokenistic booking for time wasting. Actually, in the one moment when I don't think he was time wasting that much at all, like when he's running up to take a goal kick, I don't think he'd wasted that much time at all there. But then the four times he goes down injured, well, injured in inverted commas, or like, or everything he's doing, like other goal kicks, other free kicks, just the slow restarts. And it just felt like the ref managed the whole game a bit poorly. I don't know. What do you think? I don't really want to do a lot of ref chat, but what do you think?
I do think that, and I think quite often at this level, refs get a pretty bad rap. But I think genuinely yesterday that was a real stinker. And I think, like you say, it's just basically that's just like an accumulative yellow card. But I mean, it was just he played it very cleverly, I suppose. The keeper, you know, he had the referee kind of fooled.
It's pointless though. Like it's pointless booking him then.
But that's
it's
the point, right?
Of course, yeah.
It's not a warning for anything in the 96th minute. And also, by the way, he books Jack Lancaster for that head-to-head at the end and does nothing to the keeper. And there was nothing in it between who started and who finished it. Do you know what I mean? Like, Lancaster gets booked. Keeper's got to get booked second time again.
Like, it's frustrating. I think it's right that you make the point that, it isn't due to the referee that... we didn't take what we should have done from the game. He sends one of their men off, right? Like he's not like
rightfully so, by the way.
He got
the decision spot on.
I think actually in that instance, probably what he got wrong was not just giving him a straight red and he gave him a second booking. Yeah. I absolutely love seeing Steve sending an appeal at that one as well.
What are you appealing for?
all their players are like fuming, and it's like you've literally just been booked and you've absolutely cleaned out one of our players, like literally minutes later. That was a strange moment. But again, like the right decision in the end was made, regardless of how they got to it. But like I've seen like a few people in a bit of discussion, like, the ref wasn't that bad. He had quite a good game. Like what can he do? It's like he's just got to be like it's so obvious what Burton are doing from literally the second half, and particularly after they go down to 10 men. It's just time wasting. It's cheating. Like it's that's what it is. Plain and simple. And you know there'll probably be you can probably point back to examples where we've used some of these measures in certain instances a few times, but the keeper particularly was taking the piss with it. Like really was taking the piss with it at times, and he should have been booked probably in around minute 65, 70. And if you do that, he's not doing it for the rest of the game. And if he does, then he's getting sent off. And then obviously he's posed his own problem to his team, and that's fundamentally up to him. But doing it in like the 95th minute is one of the things that I bet the ref thought he'd kind of appease the crowd a bit with, but it's pointless. It's just weak refereeing.
It's absolutely mental that he still should have got sent off, having been booked in the 95th minute. Do you know what I mean?
Well, yeah, I get that he was probably happy with his performance, and obviously they fundamentally got what they came for, and that's fine, and you know, sure they're happy with it. But if it seemed like he felt it was like a little bit big time as well, to be honest, like mate, you play for Burton Albion, come on, like your next job feasibly could be in a supermarket. So give it a rest.
Not say it how it is, Tom. Yeah.
Anyway, I'm over it. I'm over it, which is the good thing.
Look, luckily, I won't lose any sleep over it because we still didn't deserve to win the game, so it wasn't anything that cost us. As frustrating as that was, more frustration recruitment. Then let's end the pod talking a bit about this. A few questions on this. Tom, I'm going to come back to Tom and if he's calmed down from that rant. Daniel's asked, does the recruitment process at the club need an overhaul in the summer and Strang moved on? Unbalanced, injury prone every season, not helping whoever the head coach is. Bit of a big one to throw in here, because I think the first point I'll make is that throwing all of this onto Strang is I think a lot, because I think they obviously, as Mark Bonner actually said in his interview, not the top 20, it's a joint decision where they decide how many players he wants in his squad and what sort of profiles of those players, and Strang goes out and does a lot of the recruitment. Strang was also, if you're going to criticise him, he also, then in that sense, you also want to applaud him for putting, you know, a promotion squad together a couple of years ago to a team that stayed up in this division 2 years in a row. So credit where it's due, I guess. Tom, I know it's a big question. I know it's one that we talk about a lot, but let's try and sort of keep it to this January and this season in that case. How much of the blame for what's going on at the moment and maybe the lack of recruiting some of these attacking players that might have cost us 3 points yesterday that could be a huge, huge 2 points missed, do you think lies at the door of Ben Strang?
It it's a difficult one to assess, and part of, I guess, the caveat that you'd make on it is that, well, we did have a couple that were done, or apparently we had a couple that were there, or just about there, and then like sort of last minute, other clubs do things that are outside of our control. So, is that Ben Strang's fault? Like, his only job is not recruitment, and I think this is the thing that kind of gets kind of blurred a little bit. Like, he's got a lot more going on than just like, who do we recruit in January? His job is a lot more, it's a lot more kind of transversal than that. So, you know, I think he's quite an easy target, and, you know, fundamentally, we don't know exactly what the process is, how it works, what the kind of ins and outs of making a transfer happen are. I think where that criticism is probably justified and is valid is in the fact that, you know, you can call yourself unlucky for not having, you know, for having things out of your control happening, but if the things are out of your control with things like a club pulling out on the 26th of January, then questions are being asked, because it's like 4 weeks into a transfer window where you know what you need and you've still not got it. And if you're looking at external factors, then maybe that's just a bit of a cop-out. And that's probably fair, I think. I would find it very hard to dispute that and find it very hard to disagree with. But look, we spoke about the question of recruitment before, and like, you know, I know that there's a train of thought, there's an element of the fan base that, you know, would just simply go, well, let's just sack Ben Strang then. I mean, like, nah, like, it's not something that's likely to happen. I don't think it'd be a sensible thing to do because of all the things that we've talked about. You know, he's overseen a football club which has, you know, kind of developed in an incredible way over the last few years. And, you know, obviously there's a lot of other people that take credit for that. And, you know, people like Bonner and people like, or many of the players that, you know, would now be kind of household names as Cambridge United fans, if you like. They obviously take a lot of credit for that as well. But he's played as big a role in it. And I think the kind of main issue I have with the argument and the discussion around Strang is that it's only something that's ever brought up when things aren't going well. Mm-hmm. It's not something that's brought up when, you know, last summer in January, for example, you look at the signings we brought in there. It's never like, fucking hell, Ben Strang did a good job, didn't he? Saved the season. It's like, if you don't have exactly what you want or think you need heading into the end of a transfer window, it's criticised, but it's never given praise in equal measure. And for a lot of last season and the years before, it was very much a case of, well, you praise Bonner for things that go right and you criticise Strang for things that go wrong. So that's where I have an issue with the discussion, because it's just not fair. But there is also, I think, a train of thought, and I think an absolutely understandable opinion that this window could have been planned for better and prepared for better. I'm not sure I buy so much that, you know, changing the manager would or should have had too much of an impact on what our plans are. But at the same time, you know, you feel like you go into it, you know, you know in advance that you need probably a couple of strikers, you probably need a right back, and you could probably maybe do it with another midfielder. And now we're at this point kind of scrapping around trying to get these things done, and it's going to be kind of last minute. And like you say, January's not just a month for transfers, it's a month of games as well. And the Burton game and the Exeter game are, you know, good examples of ones where if we had a bit more quality available in the final third, maybe you're coming out of this going, well, actually, rather than the 5 points we were talking about before, you're coming out with 7 or 9. And that potentially is season defining stuff, you know, dropping those points. So, you know, it's maybe a little bit reactionary, and it's a little bit kind of, you know, it's a little bit kind of exaggerated, but we know how big that, you know, that run can be. You know, you talk about Mark Bonner's interview with Not the Top 20. He referred to it specifically, though, in the first season back in League One. It was a run of 3 games in January, which kind of altered our season totally, because you win 3 on the bounce, all of a sudden you're miles out of it. And that, in theory, could have been the case. It's all a little bit hypothetical as well, but I don't think it's too much of an exaggeration to say that if you have more quality options available to you, particularly on Saturday, but probably Exeter as well, you've got a few more points on the board. So there's rightfully some frustration. I kind of feel like we are going to get a couple more things done and sort of across the line. I think, you know, the window naturally gets a little bit hectic in the last few days and things happen very quickly. So I'm not that concerned that it won't happen. But yeah, for sure, I feel like there's been a bit of a lack of forward planning here with execution of a transfer strategy, which could and maybe should have served us with more points from this month than what we've got.
Yeah, that's pretty good balanced answer, to be fair. And it feels like the thing that sort of gives me a bit of comfort is Harris in his post-match saying it's not really a question of if, it's just a question of when. Like, I need these players, is what I think he said. So it will get done. Something will get done in the next 5 days. We'll talk about that on the preview show, either Thursday night or potentially we'll wait until Friday morning so we know exactly what's done when the window slams shut. Just the other side of the coin there from what Tom was talking about, Swindle. Elliot's asked, do Bonner's pod appearances and comments about budgets, bottom four in League Two when we were promoted? And Harris also saying that opposition managers are able to hoard squad players who hardly play. Do you think that's a reasonable excuse for Strang's recent recruitment struggle, is what he's put here? Or should we be doing better despite handicaps?
Yeah, I think we still should be doing better. I think, I mean, the caveat about this is I'm not going after anyone and digging anyone out, and it's not a personal attack or
Dig someone
anything.
out. Dig someone out. It's
But
much
Ben
better.
Strang has to go. No,
You feel much better for it, mate. Trust me.
I think I've experienced this quite a few times the last few seasons where we seem to take ages with deals. Like they can quite often seem to kind of go on and on, and we hear again that two, fell down last minute and couldn't quite get in the squad or whatever. But like, it does seem a bit of a recurring theme, and it's just that, we've not had loads of kind of marquee signings come in, and it. I think as football fans, we are allowed to be frustrated when we've missed a chance to win a game yesterday. We've only used two substitutes, in the game, and Harris has basically come out and said the other options weren't good enough. Well, then we need to get more players through the door. We should have already had more players through the door, and I'm sure everyone's working really hard and busting a gut, but it's just a shame and it's frustrating as a fan, to watch games like that. And but also I can't get over the fact that Joko didn't come on yesterday. I can't get my head around it to the point where I would suspect he maybe had a knock or something. I just can't get my head around it. Anyway, I think we need to be quicker. I think we need to be less reactionary and maybe. But I'm sure they're all doing hard work and research and
Well, there's an aspect of us that we just won't know, right?
no,
Like,
exactly that. Yeah.
you're right. I'm sort of with you that you do see a lot of clubs around us being able to do business a lot quicker than us and sort of identify targets earlier. But we don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So I think while the frustration is valid, it's like there probably is just quite a reasonable answer. And maybe in 48 hours, with two new signings that are much higher quality than what we're expecting, because we're going for players that maybe teams above us actually sort of might want to keep in a world, or they aren't just sort of off the scrap heap. So potentially that's going to be that will be enough for us. Look, lads, let's wrap it up here. We've got plenty of pods coming up, plenty of games in February as well to talk through. Hopefully no more back-to-back nil-nils. I mean, depending on who it's against, really. I think there's a few games in there that we would take some back-to-back nil-nils. Tom, I'm sure you'll be there to talk us through them as well. Thanks for today.
Yep. Oh, mate, imagine if we sat here in a week's time reviewing a third nil-nil on the bounce.
Would you
Fucking
take it? That's a question. We're gone. Would you take Shrewsbury? Nil nil?
yeah, of course,
Yeah,
definitely.
I think I'd take that one as
If I, you know
well.
what, if only for the, if only to be able to sit there and make the point that I've spent 3 Sundays consecutively talking about nil nil draws, and somehow we're getting at least like 40 minutes content out of it, which is, if nothing else, extremely impressive. But also, platforms all over the place, isn't it? It's like a train
Platforms all
station.
over
It's
the
like
gaff. Yeah,
I've been to fucking Euston again.
I'm pretty sure as well that Shrewsbury, I mean, I don't have the stats in front of me, Shrewsbury are the lowest scoring team in the league, and especially at home, and we're one of the lowest scoring away teams. So, recipe for disaster there, isn't there? Swindle, thank you very much as well, mate.
Thank you, mate.